I mean, everyone knows me. I'm like, give me the aliens any day. Like, a couple humans here and there is fine, but I would love to see a TV show that had the guts to, like, do a 90% alien cast. And let's be, like, brave with our aliens and not be like, oh, this girl's an alien. She's really hot, but she has, like, ridges on her, like, really, really tiny on her forehead. But she's an alien. She totally is. And it's like, no, she's not really an alien. She kind of has a weird thing on her face, and that's about it, and a weird hair color.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity. I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Shields up, red alert. Spoilers decloaking off the starboard bow. Yeah, that was a warning.
Hey everyone, welcome to Anomaly Supplemental. I will be your guest host for this evening. My name is Sarah. I'm going to be reviewing Babylon 5 Season 5. If you haven't heard my previous episodes, I guest hosted, I'm not sure how many, I think the first season of Babylon 5 was its own episode, and then Seasons 2, 3, and 4 were all split into two parts. Since I'm pretty sure, like, the first episode I did on the whole first season was like 2 hours or something crazy like that. So we decided to make them more manageable, more bite-sized pieces. So today I'll be reviewing the first half of season 5 of Babylon 5. And then part 2 should be following soon thereafter. So I was a little bit intimidated about reviewing the season, especially because they wrapped things up so well in season 4. And as many people, especially fans of the show, know, that was all the story they intended to tell. That was the end. And then I'm pretty sure they got unexpectedly renewed and just had this season of stories that they were supposed to suddenly tell. And they had really no idea what they were going to do with it. Let me be honest, it shows. Unfortunately, the first, I would say, 8 episodes, for me anyway, felt very disjointed and almost stream of consciousness level storytelling, where it was just like, why is this a story you think needs to be told? That's interesting. Or kind of like a story you would tell if you literally had an hour to write an episode and you wrote it down. No offense, writers. I know you guys had to work hard at trying to figure out what to say. But it definitely wasn't my type of show, the first 8 episodes. I'm usually a big fan of non-major arc storytelling. I think I've said that many times. I like there to be self-contained stories in each episode. I don't mind there being minor arcs, but I'm not usually a big fan of huge, really long arcs. Rabbit trail. I think that's why Legends of Tomorrow kind of drives me crazy, because the whole show is based on one really giant story arc. And so to me it's like, well, I know this is episode 4, so they can't actually accomplish their goal because that's what this whole show is about. So how are they going to fail this time? That's pretty much what the show ends up feeling like to me. Like, I do like it, but that's one of the reasons why I don't like Legends of Tomorrow. But rabbit trail, back to the actual subject of the episode. I usually like self-contained non-arc stories, and even though that's what these were, they felt so purposeless and so unmotivated that they almost made you wonder why you were watching them. It was almost like the biggest reason for watching the shows was because sometimes they would throw in like a gem of character development for you to find for a specific character that we had seen, that we'd grown to know and love. But other than that, I kind of just felt like I was wasting my time with a lot of the episodes. And I do apologize if there's anybody who really likes it. I just personally found it very searching for a direction and not finding one. This first half of the season, it felt like it was trying to find its footing and trying to buy time because it wanted to get to the telepath normals war or telepath normals Psycor. I don't know how the sides are going to be drawn. But it's like there's going to be a telepath war eventually. That's what it seems like they're driving towards. And it felt like they were like, okay, that is going to be the main focus of the season, but we don't want to rush into that because we don't have confidence that that will actually be enough meat to last for an entire season. So let's kind of bide our time and make 8 episodes where there's kind of like a hint of the telepath war coming, but we don't give it away completely, and mostly the story around it has nothing to do with that whatsoever. So leading into that, I was excited to be able to see Lita again. She's one of my more favorite characters, and kind of hoping and looking forward to knowing that this was going to be more about more of the telepath season, that Lita would play a bigger part. Unfortunately, I think I was waiting about 3 episodes to even be reintroduced to that character. I feel like I like Patricia Tallman, her acting style anyway, and I feel like she's a very good actress in the show, especially with... They give her a lot of physical acting where she has to be conveying a lot through her eyes and through her face, which is extremely difficult to do without looking comical. And I feel like she always pulls that off really well. So I feel like she got to really shine with not only her physical acting in her expression, because she sees the soul of a guy who, a ranger actually, who is dying, leave his body, and is explaining that to Garibaldi, what that's like. And I felt like that was a really great scene. She captured that emotion of what that would be like very, very well and made it very believable.
Did she tell you I was inside his mind when he died? Do you have any idea what that feels like? Do you have any idea what that does to you?
No, not really.
And do you know why? Because you're not supposed to know. No one is supposed to know except the person who is dying. When it happens, you see it as a door opening. Because there's no other way for the human mind to interpret what you're seeing. You feel the other person slipping away, and for a second, it catches you. It pulls you in, and a part of your soul goes with him.
I don't believe in souls.
Call it whatever you want, but inside, in here, there's a part of you that goes cold, empty. And after that, you're never quite whole again.
It definitely is a bigger season for Lita in that we get introduced to a band of telepaths whom Sheridan decides to give sanctuary from Psycor, from everyone who's kind of trying to use them, on Babylon 5. And they kind of go below decks and kind of try to make their own sanctuary kind of place for other telepaths to come. And the leader of the group's name is Byron. Apparently, also, you can't be a male telepath unless you have really, really long hair. So there's definitely a love interest thing going on between Byron and Lita. And he's kind of, as you know, she's never really been hot on the idea of being Psycor. And she was kind of trapped into it by everybody on Babylon 5 treating her like dirt, basically, and taking advantage of her. And then when she actually needs help, being like, oh, sorry, you're poor, so we can't really do anything. So in the last season, she's kind of forced to rejoin Psycor. Byron is kind of the person who makes her realize, no, you really do have a place to go. You really do have options. You really don't have to do this. You don't have to, like, sign your life away. You don't have to be afraid that you're not going to be able to make a living unless you're working for them, kind of thing. And kind of bringing her around to seeing their way of things. And I have to say, the group, the telepath group, is an interesting addition and interesting characters. A lot of the things they do feel very creepily cultish to me. So that is a little confusing when you're like kind of rooting for the telepaths, but at the same time you're like, guys are kind of weird and culty. I don't know. Like, is Lita getting sucked into a cult? Like it's kind of confusing. The whole telepath storyline is very interesting though, and you definitely see their side through the whole first half of the season. I haven't gotten onto the second half yet, obviously. So bear that in mind. If I'm making guesses about the future or saying, oh, this might be this way, I haven't seen the second half yet. I like to watch it right before I actually do the review, so it's fresh in my mind. So I might make a lot of false conjectures. But basically, through a really, really creepy scene between Byron and Lita, because, you know, they like each other and they're like, oh, well, physical attraction, let's like have sex and stuff. But they say it exactly like that. They really don't. But anyways, I'm just five and I still am really awkward talking about stuff like this. But anyways, so like it's a really awkward, weird scene because they're totally like, and she's like, before they're about to, she's all like, oh, you know, I don't know what happened to you when my barriers come down, when you like see everything in my mind and everything. And, you know, he's basically like, oh, I can handle it. And, you know, I'm making it sound so romantic. But like they're like behind like this really thin veil. And as they're doing the deed, I'm probably blushing. Oh my gosh. Like, there's a whole bunch of other telepaths behind the curtain, which, I mean, I do understand if you don't have much space, then you kind of take a curtain as enough privacy. But that made me, like, extremely uncomfortable. And then, so anyways, Lita is actually showing him everything that the Vorlons put her through, which I feel like could have been a bit of a mood killer. But basically you find out through that scene, and all the other telepaths find out because they're kind of all linked together as this is all happening, that the Vorlons were the ones who created the telepaths that were specifically supposed to serve like the humans in the war against the shadows and everything. So they find out they're basically made to be weapons and to be in the service of others, which, when they all find that out, Byron gets really, really angry. Up till then, he's been, like, pretty reasonable. But then he's kind of like,
we would be normal. We would have lives. We would be able to walk and live and work among normals without fear of persecution if the Vorlons had not interfered with our normal development. We were made for their benefit, to save them.
The Vorlons are gone, Byron. There's no one left to settle the score.
No. But the other races are still here. We were made telepathic to serve their cause, save their worlds. Now they have to recognize that. They have to understand that they are responsible for us, for our condition. They have to make it right, Lita. We'll force them to make it right.
How?
By giving us a homeland of our own. We don't fit here because we're different. Because we were made different. They owe us a place where we can be among our own kind. We'll ask to speak to the Alliance, put our case before them, see if they can be persuaded to do the right thing.
And if they can't?
Then we'll make sure they have no other choice.
It's very confusing because I agree with him in that I think that the telepaths have been badly misused, and kind of it's like this weird stigma of, oh, we're afraid of you telepaths, but hey, we'll totally use you to do our dirty work. And it's like, really, they've been treated terribly and they do deserve, like, to, which is what Byron says, have their own homeworld and their own planet. But just the way he goes about it and being so angry at, it's like he wants to be angry at the Vorlons, and they're like, oh, the Vorlons are all dead. So then he's like, okay, well, then I'll just be angry at the people that they created us for, even though it's not like the humans specifically created them or anything. Although it was interesting, rabbit trail again. You see in the flashback of Lita when she's in a test tube, you know, that the Vorlons gave her the information that, like, they kind of, they engineered all these different telepaths for the different species and stuff. But it's interesting because, I mean, that's the implication. And I thought one of the other implications was that, like, the Narns were the only ones who didn't have telepaths. But I do think it's funny that every time we see telepaths, they're always humans, which I think is super boring. I feel like we probably saw somewhere in the past seasons other alien telepaths. But it's just, like, random that we never see them. We always see human ones. Which makes sense in Psycor because they strike me as kind of, like, you know, anti-alien like the Imperials. But yeah, so he gets all mad and everything, and he's like, we're going to go and demand our own homeworld, which I don't think is too much to ask personally with how everybody treats them. I mean, it makes me mad, and I'm sure it makes him very, very mad. So he and Leeta, like, her whole driving story is that she's helping Byron and the telepaths go and try and ask for their own homeworld. But unfortunately, they kind of, probably from experience, learned that just asking for something isn't going to get them anywhere. So Byron basically tells the Alliance, oh, well, if you don't give me a homeworld, we've all, like, spent a week scanning everybody, so we know all your secrets. So if you don't give us a homeworld, then we're going to tell everybody all your secrets. So it's, like, basically blackmail to get a planet. So it's hard because I'm pretty sure if you went about it in the right way, they still would have said no, which I still don't get because there's probably, like, a billion inhabitable planets. And, like, if you're so afraid of the telepaths, you could even, like, take them light years away and let them, like, start over, like, completely and be all primitive and whatever and then not worry about them coming after you. But apparently it's too much. It shocked me. Even Sheridan's like, are you kidding? Like, we can't do that. Like, that's insane. And that was before Byron even dropped the bomb of, oh yeah, and we have all your secrets, then we'll tell everybody if you don't give us a planet. So that doesn't go over too well. And basically, a lot of different events lead up to where I left off. The telepath band, rogue telepath band, barring themselves in the underground when they're trying to get them out. And Psycor, you know, is called in. And Byron tries to, like, negotiate a deal. And the deal kind of goes south. And then eventually, at the end, Byron and a bunch of the other telepaths end up committing, like, group suicide after telling Leeta that she needs to go back, like, go out of their group and not be one to die, that she has to, like, kind of continue and be strong and everything. Which, you know, Byron starts singing this weird song that they kept singing, they sang earlier in the season, and it still was, this, they keep making them seem like a cult. It's so weird. I know they're not, but they just keep doing weird things. Like, why would you sing a song right before you, like, shot chemicals and exploded you and a bunch of people? It just felt weird. So that's where Leeta is left now. Basically, she ends this first half of the season telling all the leftover telepaths who didn't get exploded, I have safe places for you to go. We're going to start again tomorrow. You know, remember Byron. And it's like this whole movement and, you know, like all the bad stuff's about to start. Which I feel bad because the character of Byron wanted there to be change, but he really definitely didn't want there to be violence used to change things. And I feel like I see the whole remember Byron, and throughout the episode you see people fighting in his name, and it's like, it's a shame, but it seems like his vision for the freedom for the telepaths is going to be skewed into, let's, you know, kill a bunch of people in the name of Byron, you know. So another place that has to do with this, that where this first half of the season ends, is you hear that the Psycor headquarters have just been bombed. And so you're kind of like, okay, all this is really probably going to start coming to a head now. In the season so far, Sheridan and Delenn have kind of been non-entities. I mean, in my opinion. Sheridan has absolutely no bite and is just Bark because, you know, he's not the captain anymore. He's just the president, which that sounds ridiculous. He's not the captain anymore. He's just the president. But, you know, like in a show, being the captain is where it's at. You know what I mean? Like you're going to be, you know, bringing about more change. And unfortunately, the president in shows kind of more of a passive role in this show specifically. There's not much development, I think, for Sheridan and Delenn. I mean, they still seem happy together, which I'm glad about. Unfortunately, we haven't got much of Lanier, which is sad because he's a character I really like. One interesting moment we get between Delenn and Lanier it's in the episode, The Very Long Night of Londa Mollari, is where Lanier basically comes clean and, in not so many words, is kind of like, yeah, I kind of am still in love with you, and it's kind of making things difficult for me, and I kind of don't want to be here anymore. So he decides to go off and be a ranger and train really hard, and basically says, kind of want to be the man you would have chosen. So I know it's hard for her because she sees him as a dear friend, and I don't think she sees him in a romantic way at all. So it's that hard thing where she misses him, but she doesn't want to lead him on. She doesn't want to make things more difficult for him, but it's hard for her because she really loves him as like a, as I don't know, like a brother or a friend. But obviously he's super in love with her, and so he leaves. And I thought we would maybe get more scenes of him training as a ranger, but we kind of get allusions to him, and at one point one of the Minbari's rangers guys is talking to Delenn about how, oh, we're worried about Lanier because he's training really hard, like ridiculously hard, like, and seems to be like completely driven towards something, we don't really know what, but if we feel like he's gonna burn out and really hurt himself. And so I was kind of disappointed because I'm a big fan of Lanier, but we haven't really gotten much. I mean, there might be in the second half, but I tend to doubt it, especially where the season's going. But I feel that way with Veer. Veer left, and we haven't seen him. I think we saw him in one episode, and he hasn't really been in it any other time, which is unfortunate. I think I've said in the past episodes, I've always been a big fan of both Veer and Lanier, and I think they're two more undervalued characters and underutilized characters on the show. There's a scene, I can't remember which episode it is, where they're actually together and actually get a scene together, which they don't often. And Lanier is talking to Veer about how he's going to be leaving and everything. And, you know, they're just drinking together at the bar and everything. And I like that scene. I thought it was a nice character moment. The elephant in the room is the new character of Captain Lockley. I can't remember what her first name is. It might be Elizabeth. I want to say it's Elizabeth. I'm not sure. But one of the bigger moments for Sheridan is that they have Lockley come on to kind of take over Ivanova's spot. And you find out, spoiler, don't listen if you don't want to know, but we find out that Lockley and Sheridan had been married in the past, which is something that Delenn is not very happy to find out, as you can imagine. They were only married for about 3 months when they were really young and ended it pretty quickly. I say spoiler very lightly because I was very disappointed and thought it was completely obvious from the beginning that that was what it was going to be, and was kind of hoping that they would have had some kind of a different relationship or had a different reason for having a bond that wouldn't be like, oh, they were married. Because I feel like that's boring. I feel like that's like so predictable. So that's interesting. In the first three episodes, I feel like we just kept seeing her and didn't really understand who she was as a character. Other than everyone was kind of like, oh, well, we know you were in the war, but which side were you on? You know, were you on Earth's side? Were you on our side kind of thing? And there's that whole, like, everyone doesn't trust her because they don't know which side she was on and everything. And she's kind of just skirting the issue like, well, I was on the side of Earth. We all were on the side of Earth. You know, we all wanted what was best for Earth, which is a safe and terrible answer. But her and Garibaldi butt heads a lot. And I have to say, ever since Garibaldi got taken over by Bester, I used to really like him as a character. But there's something about him that really rubs me the wrong way, especially in this season. He just seems like he's spoiling for a fight all the time. And I know he was kind of like that before Bester was controlling him and everything. But I feel like it wasn't to this extent. I just feel like he's always... I feel like he was kind of a jerk with a twinkle in his eye in the first three seasons, and now he's just a jerk. And, like, there's no twinkle, there's no sparkle, there's no punching him and saying you're a punk. He just is a jerk. It's like, I don't really like where his character has gone, and I that makes me sad because I really like that character and I really like the way that actor plays the character. I guess it kind of makes sense after everything he's been through that he kind of would be a little more humorless, a little more cold, but I'm just not a big fan of it. Going on to, I'm getting Lockley and Garibaldi you know, intertwined, but wanted to finish talking about Lockley. I wasn't sure whether I was going to like her, and there was even this one whole episode, I think it was A View from the Gallery, that was told from the viewpoint of two janitors, which normally would be an interesting idea, but once again, kind of felt like, what are we doing? Like, this is like the last season and you're telling the story from the viewpoint of janitors? Like, okay, interesting choice. I mean, Andrew was saying it was interesting because it was intriguing seeing the characters from the outside. And the whole point of the episode was kind of the janitors were the audience remarking on the show as fans, you know, in a quote-unquote veiled way. Read completely obvious that they were supposed to be the audience. Andrew thought that was interesting seeing the characters from an outside perspective. I didn't like it because I realized the way I watch shows is basically I'm pretty much in the show. I'm usually the character in the scene, like I'm part of it. And I don't like shows where it's kind of like an audience commentary almost, because where I see the people, kind of the main characters from an outside perspective, because I feel like that takes me out of the show and it makes me remember that it's just a show and I feel alienated. So I didn't really like that show. But basically that whole entire episode was set up kind of to be like, hey, we know you all liked Ivanova and that you probably are going to hate Lockley, but here's why you shouldn't hate her. And, you know, that at the end the janitors end up, you know, saying, hey, you're not bad in my book kind of thing. Like, please accept Lockley. Please give her a fair shake, you know. But ironically, you know, I'm not saying it didn't necessarily not work because, you know, I wasn't sure what I was going to think about her. But as the show has gone on, I do like her. I think she's a very strong character. I feel like she knows her mind, that she admits she has flaws, but she also realizes that when you're in command, you don't have the luxury of dwelling on your flaws and you don't have the luxury of questioning as much. You question for a little while, but then it's kind of like, okay, it's time to make a decision. And for some people, I think that rubs them the wrong way, that she has such strong personal convictions that she is, you know, making her decisions based on, you know, her strong personal convictions, which are based on her being a soldier. And she talks to even Garibaldi that her most, you know, the thing she values the most is loyalty, honor, and duty. So that motivates her and propels her as a character and shows the interesting, if you will, civil war, you know, as in the Marvel movie, aspect of most people really are just trying to do what they see as right. They're usually not trying to do it to be a jerk. So it's interesting seeing her motivated by what she sees as the absolute right thing to do, and a lot of people disagreeing with her or disagreeing with the way she does it. I personally do like her in that as a character because, like I said, I feel like she has flaws, and I don't think she's saying she doesn't, but I think it's interesting seeing someone be like, well, this is what I have to do and this is what I'm going to do, and I don't really care if you like me or not because it doesn't really matter because I'm doing what's right. So I'm definitely, the character is growing on me, and I definitely would say, you know, she's not one of my favorite characters as of yet, but I definitely don't have anything against her and do find her interesting. One thing when we talked about Garibaldi, really the only thing I didn't cover for him, he hears Bester is on board because Lockley called him in. And he goes like all angry and, you know, goes down like basically chomping at the bit to get Bester and everything, and is kept from doing so by Lockley. And she pushes him back a couple times, then she actually punches him. Which started in a very interesting debate between me and my husband about who was wrong and who was right in that situation, which I won't bore you with the details. But anyway, eventually Bester is alone later on the show, and Garibaldi goes with a gun to end him after everything he's done. And Bester reveals, yeah, actually I put like a neural block in your brain so that you can't actually kill me, like ever. So that's pretty awful for Garibaldi, if you understand his character, because it would be like the worst thing ever. So there is that, you know, one you're wondering, is he going to try and figure out a way to remove that, to get that taken care of? But I think Bester was saying he put it specifically, like, the neural block in among, like, his, like, really, really important stuff in his brain, so that if anyone tried to take it out, basically, I guess they could make him brain dead or make him a completely different person. He put it in the most dangerous part of his brain, so it'd be, like, almost impossible to do anything about it. So, yeah, Bester, at his usual jerkiness, which is an understatement. So, yeah, Bester, he drives me crazy. He does really good at his job of being, like, really creepy and really horrible, and you're like, you scare me, and I also want to push you. So really good on Walter Koenig's part. He's definitely a great actor in that part, and it's fun seeing him play a character I'm sure he had a blast playing.
You can't talk to them. You can talk to her. You can talk to me. Everyone talks to me. People like talking to me. I guess I just have that kind of face. But you can't talk to them. They can't be trusted. Just leave it to us.
And if Garibaldi is killed?
Zach gets his room.
So Jakar and Londo, onto them, as a, you know, no secrets. Jakar is my favorite. So, you know, save him close to best for last. Jakar and Londo can't really be talked about separately as usual, because as usual, their storylines keep seeming to intertwine, which I always do find interesting. And I think that is why I like them so much. Here's the thing. I love Jakar. He's my favorite character. Duh. I don't like Londo a lot, but I like him as a counterbalance and an interesting contrast for Jakar. I think they work well together. They remind me, in a way, of my two favorite characters from Deep Space Nine, which is, you know, Odo and Quark, in that they can't stand each other, but actually seem to be a weird kind of friend type. We're kind of friends and we kind of hate each other. I just like that. I think it's funny and it makes for a lot of funny moments.
Right now, even though we are not at war with anyone, our production of war material has increased 15%. Why?
Well, with everyone now on the same side, perhaps you're planning to invade yourselves for a change. I find the idea curiously appealing. Once you finish killing each other, we can plow under all the buildings and plant rows of flowers that spell out the words, "Too annoying to live," in letters big enough to be seen from space.
Jakar, as usual, has a lot of really great narration scenes, still fulfilling his role for the show as kind of like the timekeeper for everything. We have Londo talking about how, you know, he's definitely going to die. It's kind of his fate. And, like, he's about to become the emperor when the regent dies. And so Delenn has an idea, you know, to hope to bring Centauri and, you know, Dinarin together. Everything's all about, like, the alliance is all about trying to bring, like, actual peace between people and everything. So she's like, well, Londo has to go down for, like, a political thing to Centauri, and he needs a bodyguard, and kind of hinting. And Jakar's like, oh, well, we'd need someone who is like this and like this and like this. And she's just looking at him, and he's like, no, you can't be serious. Like, I'm trying really hard to think of someone who'd be better than me as a bodyguard, but I can't really. But he really doesn't want to be his bodyguard. So Jakar ends up being Londo's official bodyguard, which is really funny and great, but at the same time, I don't like it, because obviously, you know, where we saw flashes of the future with Sheridan, that Londo and Jakar were together, you know, at the end, and when all the bad stuff started happening. So everything's starting to feel like it's falling into place for the dark future, which, like me and Andrew were saying, like, it feels like they keep putting everything on track for all that bad stuff still happening, and it's like, well, is something going to happen to make sure it doesn't happen, that all that bad stuff doesn't happen? Or are they just going to end the season and you're just going to know that everything totally ends horribly for everybody and you're just supposed to live with it? So now Jakar is Londo's bodyguard and they go down to Centauri together, and it's pretty great. You know, you can tell that Jakar is completely enjoying his role as bodyguard because all the Centauri have to treat him nicely and not be jerks to him. And he's really, he's definitely milking it for all it's worth. And there's this really great scene when one of the Centauri is obviously trying to entrap Jakar into acting like the monster they all know he is.
I brought someone with me. Do you recognize him?
Yes. This is the Centauri that whipped me before Cartesia.
And do you recognize what he is holding?
Yes, that is the whip he used.
I put his fate in your hands. In front of all these witnesses, I say that you will not be prosecuted or charged for anything you might do. Go on.
Tell me, Minister, if I were to strike you, which would you be angry at, the hand that struck you or the heart that commanded the hand to strike?
Well, the heart, of course.
The hand has no choice but to do as it is told. It is the heart that carries the burden, and that heart is dead in both of us, Minister. It died with Cartesia, and it died in me soon after. Besides, everyone knows that the true source of pain is neither the hand nor the heart. It is the mouth. Is it not, Minister?
And basically, once again, but he's super wise, and basically everybody's kind of, like, dumbstruck, like, oh, maybe he isn't a monster after all. In that same episode, another favorite line, of course it's a Jakar line, but Londo asks, is there ever a time you're not eating, to Jakar, and Jakar's basically like, no, like, we believe it's bad luck to die on an empty stomach. And I'm like, yeah, Jakar's my spirit animal, basically. In that same episode, there's this guy basically who tries to kill Londo. He ends up getting him away from Jakar and ends up throwing a knife at him, and the knife stops right before Londo and ends up spinning back and zooming back and hitting the guy who threw it. And Londo turns around. There's just this huge alien in, like, shadow with red eyes looking at him. And later on, when he goes to actually see the Regent explains, you know, the people that I'm working for, if you hadn't heard the last season, the Regent is under the thrall of one of the worshippers of the shadow. The many worshippers, the many minions, the many allies of the shadows, they weren't taken care of, so they're still a danger. And basically says, you know, they like you and blah, blah, blah. But basically, they're just trying to make sure that the future they want to happen, the outcome that they want to happen, will happen, which involves Londo on the throne as emperor. One of the most interesting developments is that while they're on Centauri, Jakar realizes that he must be holding a Narn prisoner because he, you know, is eating this food that the Centauri say, oh, only Narns can eat that. And he was like, they were taking it somewhere. Where were they taking it? And then realizes, okay, if only Narn can eat this, then there must be someone here. So they go down into, like, the dungeons. And what the heck? Natoth is there. Like, Natoth from, like, the first season, his, like, aide and everything. And I was just like, wait, am I hearing this wrong? Or is this actually Natoth? And I got really excited because I thought that was a really cool idea to bring her back. And, you know, there's this whole really great escape scene where they help her escape. And Londo's hilarious, pretending he's drunk and everything. And pretending that she's a Centauri woman with a veil over her head that he's taking away and everything. And it's really funny. But that's it. Just that episode. And they kind of have a few lines, and Natoth explains what happened, you know, that she got taken when the Centauri were attacking their world and everything. And you think, oh, maybe they'll get a scene at the end where they'll get to talk. Nope. Oh, maybe she'll be in for future episodes and they'll get to... Nope. Like, it ends with, you know, Jakar just watching her I guess she's being transported to a different planet, you know, and everything. And, you know, maybe we'll see her, but I really doubt we will. And it just kind of sucked that it was like, that was really exciting and would have been a really exciting development. And they kind of just were like, hey, here's Natoth. Oh, there she goes. Bye. So last but not least, and hopefully I'm not forgetting anybody, was Franklin. As usual, he's one of the more underutilized characters. Basically, he doesn't get to do much. He's been recruited by the Alliance to kind of do cross-species referencing and kind of getting the medical history of all these different species and everything, and trying to make it so that the Alliance is more informed about things, more informed about different things they would need to do, like different quarantines, stuff like that. And he finds out that this one race, actually, they had a second race, like a subspecies, I guess, that they would think of it. And ended up killing them all off because it ended up being like, oh, illegal to actually like interbreed with them and stuff like that. And so they just decide, oh, we'll just kill them all off. But then they find out that later it's like, oh, they kind of needed them because now the species can't actually procreate. Like their numbers for procreation are actually going down, like, and steadily going down. So it was something that happened like years ago. So obviously all the people who actually committed the crime were gone. But, you know, these specific aliens were still trying to keep it under wraps and keep him from finding out about it. But then you find out that they kind of hoped he would find out about it because they need help trying to figure out how to reverse this and how to get their numbers back up. And I felt like the only thing I have to say about Franklin in this first half of the season was that I felt like that episode really did a real disservice to him, because he was very angry that they killed off that subspecies, and rightly so. He really should be. But he was really holding these people responsible for it, who it was like not even their grandparents who did it, not even their great-grandparents who did it, but, you know, their great-great-great-great-grandparents, and they are suffering because of it. And he kind of just keeps saying really mean things to them.
We are a dying people, unless you help us.
No.
You hold us responsible for those who were killed.
Yes.
Even though we ourselves were not yet born.
You helped hide the truth about what happened by revising your history. Cutting out the parts you didn't like. Now, as far as I'm concerned, that makes you an accomplice after the fact.
It's our shame. We won't have it exposed.
Well, that's your choice. But what it means is morally, I can't help you.
And, you know, when the one lady was talking about forgiveness and everything and all this, and, you know, they feel really bad about it and they hid it because they were ashamed of it.
Perhaps someday you may forgive us for what our ancestors did.
I can't forgive you. It's not my place to speak for the dead. Only forgiveness can come from the Hayekto. Too bad they're all dead.
And he just basically keeps saying all this mean stuff about them because they hid it. And I do understand that because, I mean, they should have brought it to light and everything. But it just felt so uncharacteristically merciless of the character, because I feel like that's one of the things that I love about Franklin, is he embraces his role as a doctor completely and just kind of views everybody as completely equal and completely deserving of mercy and forgiveness and oh, give them a fair shake, or oh, listen to their story, or oh, give them a chance to explain themselves. And he just, for me, he embodies, I don't know, he's a very compassionate person. Like I said, he embraces his role as a doctor wholeheartedly, and just felt like the only thing that really happened with his character that was kind of important in this season, and I might be forgetting something, in this first half, was this episode. And I felt like it was almost character assassination for him as we know him now. So anyway, I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. It's like weird. I feel like I'm gonna be like, what in the world, you forgot this person? But I'm pretty sure I've gotten everybody. And so yeah, basically where I left off, like I said, Lita looks like she's gonna be leading a band of rebellious telepaths. Bester's angry as usual. Garibaldi's angry as usual, and the scene ends with him, you know, the one episode ends with him actually drinking, and he did have a drinking problem before, and he's either going to try and find a way to reverse this so he can kill Bester or basically die trying. Yeah, it just that's where it ends, and it'll be interesting seeing where the last half of the season picks up and where they go, and especially what happens with everybody towards the end. Like I said, I wasn't thrilled with it in the first half of the first half of the this season. I kind of felt like, how am I going to get through this? This is a slog fest. This is boring. But it really started to pick up and really started to make me actually interested in where this is going to go. I'm a little nervous about it because, like I've said before, I do care about the characters, and I felt like season four ended so well and kind of ended where you kind of felt comfortable-ish, even though the whole, like, it seems like the whole future thing seemed like it was going to happen anyway, all the bad stuff. But I don't know, it still felt like you could pretend that everything was going to work out all right. So I'm kind of worried that it's just going to end horribly and be really awful, and I'm going to be like really upset and be bummed forever. So hopefully it will end well. I just have 11 more episodes, and so hopefully I will be doing part two pretty soon. So if you're interested, make sure you stay tuned for that. Until then, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. As usual, please write if you have any questions, opinions, comments, anything like that. If you disagree, if you agree, all that kind of good stuff. And definitely check out future and past episodes of Anomaly Supplemental. Thanks again for listening.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed. Right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squareitude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental news, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I'll still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic.